What's up, guys? Thank you for tuning into my channel today. I'm here with
Sadiqua Williams Glassman.
And Sadiqua, is it okay that I have consent for interviewing you today?
Yes.
All right. So Sadiqua has listened to my podcast, and she is currently an adult. Sadiqua, do you mind stating your age?
I am 43.
So typically my podcast is about teenagers' minds and the way that we feel about talking about our experiences to a microphone that we can't necessarily explain to an adult or our parents. Now, Sadiqua, I just wanted to understand, how did you view my podcast, my pilot? What was your understanding from my point of view?
I think that you wanted to give voice to your generation of and your peers, and your why behind it, I believe, was or is so that we can begin to understand each other and have better relationships.
Right. Now, do you think that better relationships would improve communication for teenagers and parents, or even friendships or relationships between couples?
Actually, I think it's the other way around. I think that better communication will beget, if you will, better relationships between parent, child, you know, teammates, lovers, office mates.
Did you have good communication skills with your parents growing up? Describe your teenager life in the way that you experienced certain things that you might have been able to express, or some things that you would have necessarily had to keep upon yourself.
So I was always straightforward, and I was, my mom did allow me to say, if you will, my side, if you will, or basically in the form of explaining to me, young lady, what's happening. And so I would use that opportunity to explain. So I did, I was able to voice my objections and so forth. Is that what your question?
That was part of my question. That is answering part of my question. But let's say, did you ever feel open about talking to your parents about going to a party? Did you ever go to any parties about your relationships?
Yeah, so not so much about my relationships. Like, my mom knew I had a boyfriend, but that was kind of like it. as far as parties, yes, I was very much so a social butterfly. So I would ask, could I go to a party? And I had a curfew. Sometimes I didn't make the curfew. But yeah, I was able to say, and then I would go to the party I said I was going to. Now I might have also left that party and went to a different party. Didn't tell her that, but first of all, there was no cell phone, so you couldn't do that. And but yeah, I was able to go out when I was a teenager, stay out. I had a curfew though, so I wouldn't be able to stay out all night. I had friends who didn't have curfews, and I had friends who had curfews that were, I guess, stricter than mine. So I had it all. I saw all parenting styles with my friends.
Would you ever say that it was unfair for your curfew, or would you say it was reasonable?
Well, okay, so as a teenager, yes, it was unfair. As an adult and as a mother, it was fair. But at the time, not only did I think that the time was unfair, like that I had to come in at 1 o'clock or, you know, in middle school, 11 o'clock, was because I had a younger brother, and he's around 2 years younger than I. And he either didn't have a curfew or his curfew was after hours. Like, we would have to be in, let's say we had a 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock curfew when we were in middle school, going to the skating rink, let's say, because that's what we would do. He didn't have one or can get come in later. And my mom, and I understand her perspective, which was when he's a boy, and boys, you know, being out later is not as dangerous as young ladies being out later. And from a stance of, you know, fairness, like, it's about age and fairness. But she had an insight, you know, that I just didn't have, which is, yeah, you know, 14-year-old girls shouldn't be out at 1 in the morning. You know, so the danger factor for you is higher than him. That's a fact.
I would agree.
Yeah, I didn't agree then, but I agree now. Mm-hmm. Even though I used to have a rebuttal to that, because I know how and why I always used to have a rebuttal from my perspective. So I used to have a rebuttal, but I do understand why I had to come in earlier than my brother, who was younger than me.
Now, as a mother, and as a mother of children of four, have you ever felt like that you had a strong connection with communication with your children?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's very important to me, having a voice and letting anybody at any age know the importance of having a voice has always been important in the forefront. So yes, all my children know that they can communicate with me about however uncomfortable or however wrong or whatever, you know, whatever the judgment that one may think, we can still talk about it.
Is there anything else in your life besides being a mother of four that would make your life kind of extraordinary besides the fact that, okay, so my goal on my podcast was for people to necessarily just to express themselves, not even only express themselves, but to literally talk about anything that they could get off their chest, or even not to just necessarily get off their chest, but would like the world to know. Now, sometimes the experiences that we go through, we don't necessarily open up about it right then and there. And then we also might go through experiences like when we're starting businesses, when we meet new people every day. And I've noticed that you have your own current business, which is, what's the name of your current business?
So I have businesses.
Businesses.
Yeah. So I have a business myself as a self entrepreneur, then I have a business with my husband. So the business with myself is Sacred Sustenance with Sadiqa, and my alter ego, if you will, where I call myself the Inner City Hippie. So there's Sacred Sustenance with Sadiqa, and then under that is Inner City Hippie. And as an Inner City Hippie, I give workshops to young people, which connects them with nature through gardening and play. So I have workshops, and they come and they play in the garden, and we plant something and we make a tea from it. And then I also do that same thing with adults, with having them connect with the garden or nature through play. And our form of play is a little different. With the adults, we go around to each plant or to plants that's on the tour for that day, because the workshop includes a tour. And we taste and we nibble and we smell and we feel, and we have like a connection, mindful moment, just stopping and connecting with nature and ourselves in the meantime. And then we also make a plant-based item with that. So that's one business. And it's a great, it's a business that includes basically an experience. Yeah, that's what Disney is. Disney is a business, yes, but it really sells the experience of being at Disney. So that's what I'm trying to do, but having the experience of being in the garden and with nature.
Mm-hmm. would you say this is a life impacting experience?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it a lot. I enjoy how I, when people have the tours or when children have the workshops, they speak about this being a memorable experience for them. And so I think it has a great impact, positive impact on not only me, but them. And that's like a, you know, a double win. And actually nature, so it's a triple win.
Would you say that the world we live in today with the types of technology that we have, is that pulling us more away from Mother Nature herself?
Well, I think that it has, but I also think that it has not. That's what it is, because technology is just technology. It's just used in a way to be for or against nature. That's really what it is. So there is technology out there that shows and maps the terrain and the genetic and chemical makeup of the planet Earth and plants and all of life. And that comes from a certain technology that we have that allow us to go, you know what I mean, delve into the magic of the planet Earth, let's say, or of anything. But then there's technology that you can make a bomb or you can bomb someone with. So really it's just technology, it's how it's used. So I have a problem with, my problem more isn't with technology, it's how ethical or unethical the use of technology is.
Would you say our minds, our brains are almost like technology?
Our brains is like technology?
Because we can make ethical and unethical decisions, but yet as we grow, we advance. So if we learn, when we learn something, like the stove is hot and we touch it, we learn not to touch it again so we don't burn. Mm-hmm. But then as we grow older, we begin to realize that certain things we do is more advanced than the younger ones below us, as if like you had generations iPhones. You have an iPhone 12 Pro Max, which has better cameras, from a little iPhone 4S, which only has one camera that can't really see well. An older and adult can see and understand and can process what the bigger image of certain things are. Mm-hmm. My question is from a teenager like myself, from person your age, not necessarily referencing us to technology pieces, but would you agree that our minds are sort of like technology, because we, as we grow, we learn and we experience and we advance? Would you agree or would you disagree?
I think if I understand what you're saying is more this way. It's that technology, because we are the original. Nature, us, human, we are the original. So instead of we are like technology, technology is like us. So I would say what you're saying, but I would turn it around, because like you said, we grow and advance and learn and become better at whatever it is we're functioning in. In this sense, in functioning and being a human being, we continue to grant, advance and grow and know. And as a civilization, you're saying technology does that with the camera. Like, it gets better and wiser and smarter, if you will. Except technology doesn't get wiser, which is why we humans, us, nature, we are on top of technology. But yes, technology grows and advances just like we do. But it does because we do. The reason that technology advances is because of us. Because technology has always existed. At one time, a fork was considered technology. Literally, something you can use. And you pick up and you get it. If you think about when human was born, or made, or created, or whatever, and then you think about a fork. At one time, people didn't use forks. That's a fact.
People used to use their fingers.
Right, which is the original tools, which is not a savage. It's just the original tools. Every species that eats uses its hands or tools. Squirrels, chipmunks. So not just, you know, you can't eat with your fingers, oh gosh. Like, that's the original man. That's the primalness of it all. So the fork has now, because at one time, before there was metal, there was wood. You know what I mean? The fork wasn't even, if we had to think about advancement in technology and using a fork, it probably was a solid oval piece. And then somebody decided to poke holes and make it like lines, and then now it's like a fork.
So it'd be easier to grab and stab.
Yeah, and then after you did that, it needed more of a handle, so they made the top part skinny. We get to talk about the evolution of a fork and see how it came to be. So, but it's only us. It's always us that's doing the technology. So I think the technology is advancing, to answer your question, but it's not. And it's advancing like humans, or like we advance, yes, but it's under us because we are the advancing of technology. We are why technology advances.
Do you think that we cut certain parts in our life? In our life, or the typical things that we would do every day to make an everyday life easier for us? If you have a schedule from 9 to 5,
yes,
and just to make life a bit better, we would take certain parts out of our schedule,
okay,
or we would add little fixes in. Do you think we do that to make our life
if that easier? Makes sense. And that makes sense. I once heard a man say, I was on a field trip, was it with you or Farrell? Can't remember. I was in Tallahassee, it was on Farrell. It was on a field trip. We were visiting native lands. It was a field trip, and we saw these mounds that native live in that I'm shamelessly don't remember today. In any event, they were talking about the fire and how the Indians, the Native Americans rather, they knew how to make a fire with dung and how they used it. And it didn't do it. They made it from scratch. And someone was like, well, yeah, because they didn't use fire. They didn't use matches or lighters, which is much easier. Think about, you know, having to start a fire then. Now you can literally just light a match. And the one guy was like, yeah, but if they'd have had that technology, they'd use it. And that is so true. You know, sometimes we...
Yeah, it would have been quicker for
them. Yeah, we can't even say that the Indians didn't, the Native Americans or whoever, they didn't use that. It's like, if they'd have had it, they'd have used it. You know?
It's do you think that if teens had an easier way to communicate with their parents, they would have used it?
Yeah, and I think it depends on what you mean when you say easier way.
Like, for an example, let's say I got a DUI. And easiest way for me would to communicate with you, which hypothetically, I know this doesn't exist, but hypothetically, if there was some type of technology advancement that would predict your type of emotional outcome, do you think that teens would take advantage on how to communicate with their parents about certain situations that they go through?
If they can be able to dictate how mad or angry their parent will get
beforehand.
You already know that, though. You don't need technology to tell you that, because you're a living human being, and technology can't read or know personality the same way, or read, when I say read, I mean read body language, read face, read a person's character, read, you know, because there's some people who know their parents don't get angry and like, oh yeah, I broke that. And there's some people who know, like, yo, I'm going to be in the world of shh, you know what I mean? Like, so you don't need technology to tell you that.
So if we don't need technology to tell you that, then why don't we do that?
Because there are some parents that don't, there are some children who feel like their parents don't, first of all, there's two. There's some parents who do not allow their children to talk to them. And there's some children who feel like they cannot go to their parents and talk to them. That's why.
Right.
Because that really does exist. You just don't have that experience. But there's people who, you know, parents not having it. They know their parents' thought patterns and ways and, like, you know, no.
Have you ever, during your gardening classes, have you ever had any young kids come and talk to you about any certain events that they felt comfortable in because they're more involved with gardening and nature itself?
Then what? They're more involved with nature and gardening than what?
Than anything other typical to them. Like, if you're in a sunflower field, it's more peaceful and calm, and you can feel the wind blow upon you and you feel your mind is at ease and is at state, but it's different compared if you're walking down a sidewalk next to a busy main road and you're constantly worried about the next move or what's going to happen to you.
Okay, now that I understand that, what's your question?
While in your gardening classes, mm-hmm. while you're teaching these young kids, or maybe even adults, Greg, are there adults who ever attend your classes? Mm-hmm. Have they ever felt like that was a good time to express themselves or unlock certain gates that they've felt like they've not have been able to open before?
No, I've never had that experience, but I understand what you mean. And because I don't have them consistently. Like that happens when children open up to adults because they're doing something that they love, if you will, and they're working with an adult doing it. And they open up, they do that to adults that they have relationships with, like a coach, or something like that, someone you see on a regular basis. So my classes are one or two times, maybe three times. So I don't really establish a relationship with children or young people for them to want to open up so privately to me. Now with my adult tours, yes. Because with my adult tours, I speak of how a certain smell, when you smell a flower, can bring you back to something good that happened or something that was tragic that happened just from a single smell. And so sometimes, yes, an adult will share with me, you know, something that happened, whether it was good or bad, from based off of a smell. But I don't get young teenagers speaking so much to me. But I think I would. If I had a program where teenagers came every Friday and volunteered or learned how to garden in my yard, and we met every Friday, yes, I would most certainly get, because the garden does that. Or anything that mainly that you do a routine. You start having stories while you're doing that routine, whatever it is, whether it's running, you know, practicing together. I hope I answered your question.
That was definitely an answer to my question. Now, Sidigo, are you the only sibling in your family?
So, no, I have an older sister. And a twin sister and two younger brothers.
Not far apart in age-wise?
Right, we're all within... my older sister and I are the farthest apart. We're 4 years apart. But obviously I'm not any years apart from my twin sister, and my younger two brothers are up to 2 years younger than me. I have two brothers that's around 2 years younger than me.
Are you involved with your siblings quite often?
Yes, and partially. So I have, one of my brothers have a different mother. He's a brother because he and I share the same father. And I don't have an overly close relationship with him. I love him as my brother, but I don't speak to him as often as I do my siblings I was raised with.
Do you ever think about them during your garden classes?
Think about my siblings?
About your family.
My family, garden tours? Yes. Yes, actually. Because I have plants in my yard that are medicinal. And on my garden tours, I may talk about or bring in, because my garden tours, just like how your podcast is about stories, people sharing their stories. So, you know, when I'm doing my garden tours, you know, I'll share with them a bit of a family history that I have, and that obviously makes me think of my family, you know? So I have a plant that's, you know, good for fighting diabetes, and so, and I have diabetes a lot in my family, so whenever I bring up a lot of times any type of medicinal plant, I might compare it to the health of, you know, genetics or what runs in my family, so I think about them often.
Do you mind sharing your story on why you started this garden business?
No, I don't mind at all. So, I started this garden business because I wanted to go into business for myself and be an entrepreneur. And I am passionate about saving the planet, if you will, sounds kind of like saving the planet, you know, but like for real, making a difference and using my voice, because I have a uniqueness. I believe I have a uniqueness about me, which is I touch the everyday people. And when I say everyday people, I mean in a good way. The people that can make change, the masses, because I can talk to them and relate to them. You know what I mean? And so it's like they are the ones that need to be, that needs to know that they can help make a difference and save the planet. You know what I mean? By growing their own food or growing plants or doing something just positive, you know what I mean, for the planet and themselves. Like, the power is in them. And that sounds kind of corny, but I know how to deliver it in a way where the everyday people, young people too, will listen. I'm like, word, I didn't know that. You know what I mean? They'll listen and act upon it. And so it's just important for me to do that as a businesswoman. So that's one of the reasons why I went into it, because it was like I felt guided and I felt called. And I think that's most important for even especially young people to know, like, don't necessarily try to get a job to get a job. Don't try to get a job to get money. You know, get a job that makes you feel passionate, that's going to make a difference, that you feel is going to make a difference, you know. But if you follow your passion, you know, what you're good at, where you blossom at, you know, then you'll blossom. Is that where you bloom at is where you'll blossom. Let me say it that way. And so I feel like I bloom and blossom in the yard, you know, in the garden, because I'm able to tell people, like, yo, you know what I'm saying? You got problems with anxiety. You got problems with dermatitis. You know, you got whatever it is. Like, there's a plan out there for that. You know what I mean? Like, word? Like, yeah. Like, whether it's physical, whether it's something like a disease or food, hair, beauty, whatever, there's something in nature that can help you with that. Word? Yes. You know what I mean? I want to share that with people, especially young people, because y'all young people will forever be consumers of products. You buy something right now, let's say Axe. You'll always be supporting Axe and Axe family. And right now, Axe company itself, it has a son or a daughter or a nephew, whatever it is, your age. And every time you buy something, you support him. And then when you get older, you're going to still be using Axe, and you're going to buy it for your kids, and you'll be paying for his kids. It's like, whoa, we need to change the narrative. Young people need to know that they could start doing something that people can support for them.
Support for them in their future.
In their future, yeah. To follow your passion and have people supporting you. You know? So it's one of the reasons why I did what I do, is show people that they can do that.
I'm glad that you share that.
Oh, yeah.
It's glad to know about other people's life and what they do, and what they do that they love to do. Because in my opinion, not a lot of people like to work for their passion. I feel like they prefer the big check rather than doing something they might love, even if it doesn't make as much as a doctor would make.
I think it's both, if I can add in. I think some people do prefer, your words, what they prefer to get the check. I think that there's certain people who do that. Like, man, I could be a starving artist, but instead I work in computer because technology is everything, and I make six figures, so it doesn't matter. I'd rather do computer because I'm good at it, I get it, and then do my six figures. But a lot of times those people who think they prefer the check, they always come back around to the people who don't prefer. They'd rather be true to who they are. You know what I mean? You always do that. Even if you start to check at first, you'll see the most important thing is to be true to who you are and follow your passion. So there's some people who prefer, and there's some people who don't. There's people who don't go for the big check, if you will. And they're following their passion. They're struggling in their passion and accepting that they're struggling in their passion. Like, I'd rather struggle in my passion than, you know what I'm saying, get a check or some money I don't really care for or whatever. But I think it's a little bit, is that. But it's also, some people don't want to struggle. A lot of people don't want to struggle in their passion. I don't want to struggle in my passion. So I get frustrated too. You got to just know that, you know what I mean? You got to have faith and know that it's going to be a struggle. And that's what makes it great. Everything that's great has struggle in their story. Everything that's great. You listen to that person or that thing's story, there's struggle in it. So
the bad comes first, and then the end.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The quote bad. It's like the failure. You gotta fail first. There's no other way. It just outright is not. So if you look at failure not as, you know, failure need a new word. Sometimes there is failure, of course. But the failure that when you fail to get ahead, that's a different kind of failure. You know what I mean? It's actually not a failure. It's more like a lesson learned. And Jay-Z got a line that says something like that. I'm a huge Jay-Z fan. He has a line that says something like that. But, it's not really a failure. It's how you learned that you shouldn't do a certain thing. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if you make a mistake, you touch the hot stove, you learn not to touch it again. If you touch it again, you obviously learn.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Is that. It's exactly that. Yeah.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you being on my podcast today. I hope you can join again another time, because this is not just a one-time interview that I plan to have with the other interviewers that I have on my podcast. Mm-hmm. My goal is when I arise and become more popular that other people will listen and learn about others' personalities and maybe take on something new. Or not just always about taking on something new, but kind of be open-minded for the big world that there is.
Absolutely. Okay, well, yes, thank you for saying that. I would love to come back. And I will come back even before you are, if you will, big and famous.
That's the goal.
But yes, I love that goal. That's a fantastic goal. That's that advancement you were talking about at the start of the interview. So definitely hope you wish you well with that advancement. And thank you for having me.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye.